Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast, episode 316. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
I feel like I'm in some weird movie.
And Phil Wilson.
What's the name of that claymation movie that was really big for a while? I can't remember what the...
Is it The Guy and the Dog?
Yeah. I can't remember now, but...
Wallace and Gromit.
Wallace and Gromit. That sounds like Wallace and Gromit music.
It does sound like... I don't know. I just heard it and it was kind of fun. So I'd try something different.
Why not?
Yeah.
That's our buddy,
our buddy Graham is hanging out with Wallace and Gromit this weekend. So he's not on, but
he's not going to be able to make it. Yeah.
It is the
craft season. So yes,
it is the craft season. Hey Phil, I got to tell you that, I know you don't want to blow your own horn or anything, but, I saw it on your Facebook post about the Carol Evans story on the BuzzFeed office, and that was really awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun.
How'd that come about?
My favorite part is with Graham saying, "Living the dream."
Oh, funny.
No, Melissa Colorado just reached out to us. She had discovered the...
She's the reporter, right?
Yep. She discovered the office when she was out at Art of World, which is one of the stops was our building there. So she said, we'd love to do a story on what Minovate or what BuzzFeed is doing in Minneapolis and, what kind of content you're generating. And just like every other, person that stopped by, whether it's a teenage girl or a millennial of some kind, they're always disappointed to find out it's really just a bunch of engineers. There's no cats. There's no lists.
There's no listicle generator.
No listicle generators. Yeah. No B-list celebrities or anything like that.
Can we see the secret listicle generator?
Sometimes? Yeah, yeah. The magical listicle room. she did a great job and we got a chance to talk a little bit about some of the things that we do. Ideally she wanted to talk really about the news app that we're generating and we're building for BuzzFeed. We're not able to show it as of yet. So it comes out mid-month, but we did talk about Cute or Not, which is one of the apps that we've built and all of the things we're doing to iterate the Apple Watch. And what didn't make the cut was that we had that BuzzFeed and Dan Tan, one of our Google developers, our Android developers, was called out and won an award from the folks at Google for use of material design in a Apple TV app that we've built.
Oh, really?
He did a great job, and yeah,
Is he the user interface guy, or?
Well, he's just one of our Android developers. He actually worked with us at HyperIQ, and so it was really nice to get a little accolade from our friends at Google. So it was great. And I enjoyed doing the story. It's always good to kind of show off the space and we have a good time.
Well, you're turning into Mr. PR. I mean, when you guys had the launch party and you had the mayor there pretty soon. Well, I was actually a little disappointed the Rolling Stones didn't stop by when they were in town.
Well, had they known there was a BuzzFeed office, they would have been disappointed too.
That's right. They would have said, "Come on, guys, come on the jet."
And I say that jokingly, but I'm very proud of the people there at the office, and we've grown to about 30 already. So it's really nice to have that many folks in the office. We do have a great space, and we do have a good time. Yeah. And there's not anybody that I work with there that I wouldn't want to hang out and have a beer with. So very happy with that group. Thanks very much. Tim, did you want to give me grief about the millennial comment? Was that what you were?
No. I just watched it literally just before we started recording. And that was, this stuck out in my mind.
I know. Well, it is.
It's a fun place. I was thinking, man, I want to work there. And then you said it's millennials. And I said, oh, great. Yeah. The old guy, the old baby boomer can't work there. Oh, well.
No, you can.
Young people would be showing, they'd be saying, Mr. Elliott, the canes are kept in the side of the closet over there.
You had me at You Betcha on the wall there.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it is funny because I remember once my mom and dad, I forget where they were. They were somewhere on the East Coast and my mom went, oof, the feed, because feeda means, and she said this waitress looked at her like, what the hell is that? And, we're just like, hey, everybody.
I've talked to more people that don't understand what oofda is. And, it's not easy to explain what oofda is. So I usually harken it back to it's kind of like oy vey. And so
it's kind of like what?
Oy vey, you know, Yiddish.
Oh. Okay.
Oy.
Well, ufta means it's just like, oh my God, there's just too much coming at me. You know, there's just, you know, it's just too intense. I'm tired, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's the all around. Yeah,
it's kind of the all around expression. Like,
yeah,
I'm shocked. Ufta.
So anyway, there you have it.
But yeah.
Of bigger news, I think this week is the talk about Matthew Dornquist stepping down as CEO at Code 42. You know, Code 42 finds itself in the local press a lot simply because it is sort of our software industry or software company success story, darling. So
400
it's always
people know.
Yeah. And we all know somebody, all three of us know somebody at Code 42. And I know Graham's very tied in. You know, it's one of those times where, you know, it would have been nice to have Graham talk about this because he usually stays up on the business side of a lot of sort of things. So, but there's no real clear reason as to why Matthew is stepping down, right? I mean, but it's not uncommon in this sort of situation.
Yeah.
The Star Tribune story, I got the impression, you know, he had grown it as far as he could and he's stepping aside. And then when I read the Kathy Grayson story in the Business Journal, it almost seems when you read the second paragraph there that he was forced out.
Yeah, it almost seems that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just her, the way that I've taken that, you know, that statement there. You know, he wasn't immediately prepared to comment. You know, if you're stepping aside, you're going to be, you're going to have your remarks prepared for the press.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, if it's something sudden, if the board comes and says, "Hey, you're out," then you probably wouldn't want to comment to start. So,
yeah.
You know, I think this is a developing story.
Well, I think, and I don't know. Yeah.
We don't know anything.
You don't know for sure. So, I mean, but it is not uncommon for a founder to, either step down or be asked to step down simply because it's at that point in the company, you kind of have to make sacrifices like that. It's by no means, I'm sure, is he going to walk away with nothing, but,
I'm sure he's still got some stock,
you know, it's interesting. So,
well, you know, and I remember when Reed Johnson and George Johnson, no relation, they were college buddies. When Reed stepped
aside, they actually founded Johnson & Johnson. You use their band aid regularly, right?
That's right. No, not really. But when Reed was the CEO, he stepped aside so they could hire this CEO from New York who was focused in the media space and, you know, could take it to that next level. Mm-hmm. And of course, he didn't and ended up selling the company, but that's a whole nother story. The point, though,
that's what everybody, you know, everybody that that counsels you or talks to you about, you know, owning and launching a business is that you really have to be prepared to make that step if you really want the business to grow. If it's, you know, if it's a passion of yours, it's hard to be, you know, emotionally attached and personally attached to, but it is a business and you have to be ready to make those, you know, whether you're giving up controlling interest or interest altogether, it's just, it's that next step up.
Yep. Well, it's not business or it's not personal, it's business. But, you know, Matthew is just a great guy, but he's also a real visionary.
Mm-hmm. He is.
And a brilliant, brilliant engineer and just a smart guy overall.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, hopefully he'll start another business here.
Yeah. You never can tell.
We'll stay tuned.
And not to be a Debbie Downer, but Coco is closing its Fargo location. I pinged Don Ball to get some comments. Don being one of the founders of Coco. He said, "Yeah, you know, I can, he tweeted me back, DM'd me back and said that, we could either talk or he could even dial into the show. And I didn't see that last night until 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so I have no comment from Don. I really wanted to get one. But at any rate.
Let's just call him. Just ping him right now.
No, on a Saturday morning?
Yeah,
I don't think
right.
So. No. That wouldn't be a good thing.
Wouldn't you like to be greeted by, "Good morning, what the hell happened?"
Yeah. It would be the last time he would be on the podcast.
Probably.
But, you know, it's... you know, in a lot of ways it makes sense because, you know, there has been a slowdown in North Dakota because of the price of oil. I know that my mom had 1/16 shares in a couple of oil wells, and that's been diluted like mad. So every once in a while, I'll get a check for $30 to $80 for royalties. But so yes, I'm wealthy, but those checks have stopped coming, and because they capped the wells. Mm-hmm. And you know they won't be capped for long, but at any rate, the cash flow, there's been a lot of discussion in North Dakota. I've been reading some things on these various forums, and things have slowed. So I'm just wondering if that also had an impact on
some of the comments I've seen is, you know, that they're going to focus on larger metropolitan areas. And I think it kind of goes to show that, you know, there's just not necessarily a large enough base of co-working efficient, you know, people that are interested in co-working. You know, they find themselves in a situation where they work in an office or they work at home or you know, I would imagine it's a bit of a disappointment for, obviously a bit of a disappointment for Don and Kyle, but also probably a disappointment for Emerging Prairie and the folks that really kind of worked hard to get Coco to show there. And, so, you know, you live and you learn. They're still insanely successful here. I stopped at Coco yesterday, as a matter of fact, downtown, it was yesterday or Thursday. And, you know, they've opened up 4 new suites across the hall from the Coco main floor, the main trading floor. They're small, like 20 to 30 person suites. So there's a spot. This is one of the things that we talked about when HyperIQ and BuzzFeed was there. It was like, where does a company go once they get past, you know, 8 or 10 people from Coco? And now they do have another step that gets you into a little bit larger space. You still have all the amenities of a Coco membership, but you have your private space. So it's if you guys get a chance, take a peek and some of the companies that have moved in down there, they've actually, you know, they're full. Uptown is full. So Coco's doing very well. Just as didn't translate to Fargo.
Yep. Yeah. Well, bummer.
So but anyway, you know, looking at the success that Target had of going into Canada, Best Buy is saying, you know what, we got to get to Canada,
but they're doing it virtually.
They're doing it virtually.
Yeah, they are. They're much expanding
less brick and mortar expense.
They're expanding their online presence into Canada. And the thing that I kind of read between the lines here is that the way that they're doing this, entering Canada virtually and online and all of that, and getting all the pricing stuff right and the mix right and all of that, is really, I think, a prelude to opening distribution centers there. And so they'll be able to ship locally in various provinces, for example. And
yeah, this is just adding the marketplace, which is their version of Amazon's market, so that third parties can sell stuff. I guess it might be to build up their logistics and give them more of a critical mass from that perspective.
But you think it's just a matter of also tying in the local sellers, like they said in the article?
Yeah. And this is, they've had a website in Canada for some time, and, this is just adding that marketplace component that they did what 3 or 4 years ago here. And that makes them look online a lot like Amazon does, because they sell not only the Best Buy goods, but also goods from others that make sense for them. So a lot of iPhone cases and whatnot.
Well, and then Target, they're being very clear about challenging Amazon. There was this article in Internet Retailer, and I just absolutely love this. He was asked, how are you going to beat Amazon? This guy, Jason Goldberger, who's the president of Target.com and mobile operations at Target. And he said, Target cannot beat Amazon. Target will beat Amazon.
Yeah, Target.com. So he's saying it's not going to win in a online to online duel, but Target with the brick and mortar and with their online presence and with what they're doing with mobile, all of that stuff will beat Amazon, which if they do it right, I totally agree, because having that experience, that omnichannel experience from, you know, virtually you can start your trip on your phone or your tablet or on the computer, and then moves into the store, and then you can, you know, also shop online anytime you want, all that. There's a great synergy with that. So I think that's going to be their secret sauce, and clearly what Apple's done with their stores, you know, is it shows that you can beat online and you can beat price competition with, you know, a service and a store presence.
But, you know, when Werner Vogels, who's the chief technology officer at Amazon, spoke at an O'Reilly conference 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, something like that, at that time, he said Amazon.com, the maintenance and R&D and just worker bees that kept that thing going cost him about $40 million a year. And I can't believe that Target.com spending that kind of money. And so imagine having the brain trust and the knowledge base that Amazon has, plus that investment they've been doing in data centers and everything else for so long. That I think is going to be harder to beat than the merchandising piece.
I don't know if Target though, or Best Buy or any other retailer really needs to have all that back end stuff. They can certainly get it either through Amazon or through others for about probably what it would cost to do it themselves. But the entire stack that Amazon has built, software and hardware, all of that stuff, that's sort of like what Google has done. It's very difficult to beat those two companies in that sort of you know, hardware software stack for cloud computing.
Yeah,
both of them are this such dominant forces that it's very difficult for them, you know, for anybody else to build that internally. Just see what Apple's done. I mean, the back end for Apple has moved from in-house to a mixture of in-house and outhouse stuff, mostly through Microsoft Azure platform.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep.
So anyway, interesting stuff that Target's doing. They also said that they might put Apple Pay in, but only after they do chip and PIN, which is coming up here for the summer.
Well, and you know what? I was amazed because just the other day I got a chip and PIN card for my debit card from Wells Fargo. It just showed up. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
There you go.
Of course, they did say that there had been unusual activity or something like that, or aberrant activity on my account. So immediately I called the 800 number and said, because that's why they were canceling the card and redoing it. And and so I called the 800 number, and of course the guy basically tells me, we have no idea. We have no visibility into what happened. And so that
you
just
said,
just set up your new card and cut up.
You said all of those massage parlor appointments were purely therapeutic.
That's right. Well, how come every day it says Thai massage on here? I mean, what's that?
What's the deal with that?
Yeah. Oh, God. I wish. No, I don't actually. But,
whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So anything else going on in Minnesota before we get to some other top stories?
I guess this
Hydrate Me thing.
Yeah.
I didn't put this in here.
You know, I did. It's a Kickstarter, and it's okay. To boil it down, it's a water bottle that has an app that keeps track of how much water you drink or whatever fluid you want. But
okay, that seems like a stretch.
Well, but it's doing really well.
Really well. Yeah. I mean, their Kickstarter is like, you know, it's huge. What is it? They were looking for $35,000. They're at $155,000 now. This is something that came out of a startup weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. This was like they placed third at startup weekend. And so, yeah.
I mean, come on, Steve. This is the internet of water.
Well, you know, my dad, when he turned, I don't know, 70 years old, he was, he had gotten dehydrated. And his internist basically just slapped him around and said, look, Bill, you need to drink 6 8-ounce glasses of water a day minimum.
Yeah.
And so my dad had a little tablet by his phone. And whenever he drank an 8-ounce glass of water, he'd check it off. And he'd do that every day. Honest to God, he did it for like, well, until he passed, he did it for 17 years.
Until he drowned.
Yeah, exactly. Until he suffered from water, whatever that
water
disease.
Weight gain. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Anyway,
well, if you want one, it's $45.
Yeah. That's what, that's the thing that I can't get past.
They were 39, but all the early birds got those, but now it's 45.
Jeez. Oh, well, Okay, I'm not.
And you can get it in your favorite crystal pink, though, Steve. Come on.
That's true.
Yeah. That does kind of sway me a bit.
That bamboo green looks really good.
That's right.
I like how in the picture on the video they've got it. The bamboo, the yoga mat is the same color. That's attention to detail for you.
Goes with your time. So
it's well done. So hydrate me. So it's at hydrate.me.
But it's also spelled H-I-D-R-A-T-E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hydrate me.
Hi.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some other top stories.
Oh, let's talk about Apple because that's what
you're tomorrow. There we go. Tomorrow is WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference.
Tomorrow. On Sunday. It's on Monday.
Excuse me. Monday the 8th. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
And so there's a lot of expectation about what they're going to be doing. But one thing is the new Apple Watch SDK, right?
Native apps.
Native apps.
I wonder what they're going to allow developers to do.
Very good question.
It would be good if they allowed at least like a podcast app to store stuff locally so you wouldn't have to have your phone with you while you're listening to podcasts.
Right.
Because I'd imagine a lot of people would rather keep their phone in the locker at the gym and just have the watch with them. And I know you can put music on there, and probably you could sideload also podcast MP3s. But if something like Overcast could do that automatically,
yeah,
load a couple of podcasts up for you on the watch, I think that would be very valuable.
Well, iMore said something interesting in an article about the Apple Watch and battery life. They were talking about how they were surmising that Apple had specifically not implemented certain things and not moved ahead on certain native apps because they wanted to go the total opposite, meaning that the battery life would be so good as soon as people got it in their hands that they'd be like, this is a no-brainer. I can wear this all day and, until I go to bed at night and not worry about it. And
you guys haven't had any battery problems?
Zero. No. The worst it's been was the first couple days when I was, of course, goofing with the thing constantly. And I bought an extra charger, actually. Went over to the store and bought an extra charger. I've not used it yet because mine, I still have, 35 or 40% by the time I go to bed. So it hasn't been an issue. But again, there's not a lot of the native apps on there yet, and there certainly aren't things stored locally. So, but the HomeKit thing is going to be a big deal. I mean, they've officially confirmed that the Apple TV device is going to be the gateway. So that'll be, like the smart things hub. And
so you think they're going to rev the puck to make it a little more powerful and will the current version work as a hub?
I think it will. I think it will.
Well, new software upgrade, and then they can run the server software on it. Cause it is basically an iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's an old iPhone. It's like a iPhone 4 era iPhone inside.
Yeah. It's not terribly powerful or a lot of memory, but some of the HomeKit enabled devices have already started to roll out. And for those listening that don't know what HomeKit is, it's the Internet of Things platform that will allow your mobile device, your watch, your iPhone, your iPad, to act as a control mechanism for all the things in your house, all the lighting. Elgato's Eve is out, which is an air quality, temperature, energy consumption device, and Lutron's switches and so on, which I thought was actually kind of a big deal because Lutron stuff did not work very well with SmartThings in Mike's own personal experience. And I think this is going to make SmartThings a little bit nervous, other than they've got such a leg up right now in terms of having all this history that I think that's going to help them. And thank God they sold out to Samsung, because they're going to have, the backing of a company with some pockets to go after it. So I thought that was pretty good. And then last but not least, Graham was kind enough to put in a welcome to the smart home of horror.
Yeah.
Article, which was, I thought, was kind of amusing. Just all the things that are bad, if things become vulnerable to hacking on the internet. And then also how the Internet of Things will upend retirement. And this was actually pretty interesting, especially because there'll be 75 million baby boomers retired by 2026. And when you look at all of the things that potentially could be automated, it's going to be pretty amazing, you know, especially with I don't know if either of you guys have ever had to deal with the whole medicine thing with parents and making sure they take the stuff on time and all of that. Yep. And they've got to write everything down and they forget to check it off and they're not sure if they took it or not and all of that. And
it's a big racket. I've got the situation and I've looked into it, and you know, you get these devices that you can set up, you know, a month in advance, and these little doors open and at certain times to take certain things, but they're very expensive.
They are very expensive. Well, and also the automated dialers, mm-hmm. you know, you can buy one like I did at Radio Shack for $100 and set it up myself, and it would auto dial when my dad's pendant went off. But there's also ones that they sell a service, and it's, you know, it's the same. It's like $40 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredibly expensive. So, you know, having sensors and, you know, accelerometers, so if somebody falls and, you know, all that kind of stuff, it's going to be a big deal. And it would be a lot easier if you had a watch on that you could press things, even though most older people probably won't be able to see it, you know. So that'll be an issue. So, okay, one more Apple story.
Say it ain't so.
The iPhone 6S release date leaks via major carrier, so September 18th. And then I put another link in here about they may be calling it the iPhone 7.
Could be.
And, you know, it's going to have a 12-megapixel camera and, you know, all kinds of, you know, the camera is apparently going to be something that is so good that it'll rival digital SLRs. Well, yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, if you look at a lens on a digital SLR and the thing is, you know, the circle is about 4 inches in circumference, and then you look at this little teeny tiny camera phone lens, you know, there's not a lot of light that can squeeze through there. So
yeah,
this mock-up looks like a return to the iPhone 5. You know, /4 form factor.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where it's like this thick thing instead of the rounded corners.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, it just doesn't look like Johnny Ive would go there.
Nope.
You know, go back there. I don't know, because from what I've heard, people that have the six, you know, whichever version of the six, they're happy with the way it feels.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Great phone. Great phone.
So, have you guys seen and held the Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge?
No.
Well, if you get a chance, walk into a Best Buy or a mobile store and take a look at it and how the screen curves a little bit. Off the edge.
Yeah.
And at first, when I picked it up, it was a little disconcerting. But then I started to really look at it, and I thought, boy, this thing, A, it's fast. B, it's really attractive. I mean,
but it's so plasticky. The Galaxies are just such a plasticky sort of feeling device.
Well,
just
not, you know what it feel. You know what they feel. I shouldn't say that they feel. The way that they look to me reminds me of that that story about when they redesigned the Taurus and the Mercury Sable. Not the very first one, but the I think it was second generation, and the big deal designer out in California had this huge argument with an executive vice president of the design studio about the fact that he says, look, if you put more chrome in there, I'm going to quit. I'm going to resign. And the guy overruled him, and the young guy quit, and he ended up going to work for Toyota. And that's how it feels. It feels like there's somebody within Samsung that's making the decision to throw a little more chrome on the Samsung Galaxies.
Yeah,
because that's just kind of how it looks.
They just feel sort of cheap to me. And, you know, that's what always drew me to the HTCs on the Android platform was their, you know, aluminum design, you know, aluminum bodies and you know, much stronger, more durable feeling sort of a device. So I'm just not a fan of the plastic.
No, their build quality is never good. And the phones just don't last very long. They last for 2 years and they break.
Well, do you guys know anybody that has the blue phone, BLU? Mm-mm.
No.
They had one over at Micro Center, and it was $299 unlocked, and you know, it spec'd out really well and so forth, and big screen and all of that. And I looked at that and I went, my God, I mean, that would be a great travel device where you could just take it and buy SIM cards everywhere if you couldn't have your current model unlocked. But I just wonder, I don't know anybody that has one.
No.
Okay.
Nope.
So what do you guys think of this rumor of the iPhone 6C, which is a plastic version, but going back to the 4-inch iPhone 5 screen size with updated internals?
Not a chance.
No, I don't think so.
I think it would be very popular, though, because a lot of people don't like the bigger iPhones.
Yeah, but most of them still have their 5, so.
Yeah, no, what was it? The guy, Twitter guys, Ev Wilson, I think, or Williams.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Ev Williams.
He went back to his 5S. So what is he going to do now? It's interesting. I think there is some demand for that size, especially now that you have the watch. You could have a very small phone and just, you know, interact with stuff on the watch. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, what they do, if they're going to can the 5C, which seems likely because it's getting a little long in the tooth. And once they do that, then their 4-inch phones are gone.
Well, see, I think the iPhone 6, there's just the regular sized one, is just a perfect size.
Yeah, I agree. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's what made me change to an Apple device, was the size.
Yeah. Well, except I'm thinking seriously about upgrading, because I can upgrade in a year, or at the end of the year when the new one comes out. And I'm seriously considering of dumping my iPad mini and just getting a
6 Plus.
A 6 Plus, just getting a top end one. So, because I got a buddy that he and I both ordered 6 Pluses, and I chickened out and I bought the 6. I went, changed my order, and he got the 6 Plus. And this is a guy that does a tremendous amount of reading on his iPad when he's flying. And he said, I don't take my iPad anymore because I can read just fine on this. I thought, okay. So then I got one device, one charger, and I'm done.
Yep.
So
that's what I've done, but my phone is 5.7 inches. So
yeah.
Little bit on the larger side.
Yeah. Wow. Huh.
So I only put this next story in, the for IRS Steve. Story, for Steve.
For Steve.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Tim.
To say, well, because there's a hack involved, but also how I'm surprised. Well, I guess I'm not that surprised, but it's like, I don't know, disconcerting that the IRS still is running Windows XP.
Yes, that concerns me a great deal.
Yeah. And they're paying the exorbitant support costs that Microsoft has put in place for XP because they don't want anyone to use it anymore.
Right. Right. Well, because it's just riddled with holes.
Right. So,
oh my gosh.
What if the government just decided, you know, screw it, we're going to go to Linux or something like that?
Well, that would sound great, but it's not just the desktop, it's all of the apps they've written. So, when on a project last year when myself and another guy interviewed the CIO at Allina Health, one of the questions that I asked, just because I was curious, not because it was germane to the project, but I said, you know, I've seen, you know, because my doc is an Allina doc, and I said, I've seen in your facilities that you guys are all still running Windows XP. And he said, not past whatever, August 15th or something or whatever last year. He said, we're switching over totally. And they also had an app agnostic vision for the future, where it didn't matter what device you had. If you wanted to bring your own iPad or your own Android tablet, or you want to use your phone, or you want to use your Mac or a PC, it didn't matter, because all the stuff would be running in the cloud and it would all be platform agnostic. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant, because the reason that the IRS is still using Windows XP, or the reason that these guys were still using XP, is because they had all these freaking apps that were all these legacy apps that wouldn't run on Windows 7 or above. So, yeah. too bad. Okay, well, I put this next one in because I at first was excited about it. Skype for Web Beta, which was available only on Windows, is now available to everyone in the US and UK, and you can use Chrome, Firefox, Safari. And so I got all excited and I used the plugin and I installed it in Firefox and I went to, you know, everything came up and it looked like the app that I have, and it, which was great. And then I tried to make a call and it didn't work. So I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll quit the browser and reopen it. And I did. And I literally, regardless of what I did, I couldn't get it to work. And then I tried it in Safari. It didn't work. I tried it in Chrome. Didn't work. You know, it looked like it was making a call, but it didn't work. So I guess I'll wait for it to get out of beta. But it seems interesting. It will not work on the Chromebook, which is too bad. But yeah, so that's how it is. All right, one more story that happened this past week.
One more tinfoil hat story.
This is probably the most important story we'll talk about for months. Could a UFO sighting that happened recently be a sign that the Large Hadron Collider has created a portal to another dimension?
I think that's exactly what's happening.
Obvious.
Yeah.
Astonished. Well,
this is just a great photo.
I love this comment from somebody online that seems very matter-of-factly. That's a portal. It allows a craft to travel from one end of the universe to the other in a matter of seconds. Someone made a mistake when entering our system and basically got caught. What you're seeing is a craft entering, not leaving. It's like, what? So matter of fact. Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what that is.
Yeah,
oops.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody forgot to close the screen door before they... It's like, oh my God.
Well, you know,
it's interesting.
There was a real serious, you know, when the collider was first going to be fired up.
Sure.
And there
sure.
was concerns about black holes and so forth. And then they had the temporary meltdown where they had to take it offline and rebuild part of it. There was some serious discussion going on about whether or not somebody came back from the future and stopped them because they were actually going to create a black hole and, you know, suck the earth into the black hole. And
you mean Marty McFly came back?
That's right. Well, you know, we chuckle like crazy, but who knows?
You never know. You know, you got to be skeptical, but I think you also have to be open-minded. So,
well, but then everybody listening, if you go to this, this link, and you just look at the stuff in the sidebar. I mean, it's like, does 40-year-old NASA film show UFO observing Apollo 15 moon landing? Watch as Buddhist monks capture UFO flying inside their temple on CCTV. I mean, it's just, here's another one. Claims aliens monitor or cause disasters after another UFO found near volcano.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, come on, you guys, seriously? I mean, this is why nobody takes anyone seriously. And I do remember, I think I've said this before, I do remember walking out of Lawson Software one day, and it was, you know, 5:30 on a summer afternoon, and I'm walking over to the parking ramp, and I noticed two guys standing, and they're looking up in the sky. So I turn around, and I look up in the sky, and there, probably 500 feet up, is this black object, and it literally is motionless. It's just there. And so I stand there and watch it, and I was thinking, God, I wish I had some high-powered binoculars. And then some other people stopped, and we all kind of looked up at it, and it didn't do anything. It was just sitting there. I thought, okay, whatever. Well, then the next day, I started hunting around for anything, and the only thing I could find was KMSP had a little blurb about this UFO that had been seen above St. Paul, and it was checked out, and it turned out to be nothing. That's all it said. It's like, okay, well. You know, it wasn't anything hovering, you know, it wasn't like a balloon or something, but anyway.
You know, this express, this link that takes you to the UFO thing, I say, I've followed some of these links. They're pretty exciting. Like this, I love being squashed. Meet the petite model who's made 120,000 pounds being sat on by 35 stone women.
Jeez. Wow. That's a lot of stones.
That's just like. Yeah, that's a lot of credibility there.
Uh-huh. Oh my gosh.
So, all right. Anywho, I think we need to.
It's the barnyard time.
I think it is. Open the gates.
Steve's security tip of the week.
Hey, okay, it's time. Well, my big tip is think twice before using a free virtual private network, a free VPN.
I would love to go back and talk about all the free VPNs you've recommended in past shows.
No. Phil.
I'm kidding.
I know you
I'm
are.
I'm kidding.
They've all been paid for, but they're cheap. You know, like private internet access, it's $40 a year for five devices. But Hola, H-O-L-A, this company had created for their free VPN users, had created a plugin or extension, excuse me, that worked with Chrome. And it was essentially using a peer-to-peer movement of your connection. So rather than being connected to a proxy server somewhere and then you're connected out to the internet, this one actually used, like Skype does, it's peer-to-peer. It uses whatever open connections it can find along the way over the internet. And the downside was, is it was being used as a bot to attack other sites to do denial of service attacks and so forth. And the VPN is getting nailed for being riddled with security holes. And the CEO did a big humma on their blog about, you know, why we're so great and no, we're not bad and so on and so forth. The point though is if you're going to choose a VPN, go with one that, that you pay a few bucks for. There are some free VPN apps on Android and iOS, and I have zero idea whether or not those things are secure. And so that's my tip of the week.
Sounds good.
Mm. All right. So
there you go. There you go. They're all set.
All right.
We will not use Hola anymore.
Were you?
It's Hotspot Shield pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, it gets up there. Okay. In terms of the rankings,
I'll go back to Hotspot. No, the Hola is nice as a proxy server, so you can appear that you're coming in from Canada or from the UK or wherever.
Yeah.
For times when you might want to watch a video that's only available in those regions,
right?
Which comes up every so often.
Well, and there are a lot of people that use free VPNs because they want to do BitTorrent and not get caught. And so that's another reason why some of them are out there. But anyway, the reason I like private internet access is that they do not keep logs. You never know for sure.
Right.
But nothing is a guarantee.
Nope.
With anything. So.
Nope. That's for sure. Especially on the interwebs.
That's right. So. Be careful.
Well, and then the whole thing with Tim Cook and the security and encryption within iOS, I do believe that they're doing a lot of that, but I also believe that it could be partly that and partly theater to make the Chinese feel comfortable about buying Apple product, and also that, you know, there is in fact a backdoor. I mean, who knows? But anyway. So there it is. Let's do the cool thing of the week.
Okay. So as I look at the things of the week here, I have that thing from Sesame Street, you know, rolling in my head. Two of these things belong together. Two of these things are kind of the same. So, but one is Steve's. It stands out. So let's start with Tim, and then I'll do mine, and then Steve can do his.
All right.
Okay.
Tim.
All right, so switching gears here, I just saw this week. This apparently has been out for a while, but the folks at Toyland, which is a Gawker blog, it's actually a part of Gizmodo, covered it last week, and it's the Han Solo Frozen in Carbonate Mini Fridge, which is an awesome, very small
that
mini
is
fridge,
awesome.
Which a scaled-down version of Han Solo Frozen in Carbonite. And it has like a backlight that's really super cool.
Yeah.
And it'll hold 15 cans.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is at the BuzzFeed office that
The mini fridge would be good. Yeah.
Well, this would be like people just wouldn't stop looking at it. This would be an impediment to productivity. An impediment. Because they'd, yes, exactly. They'd be saying, wow, look, there's Han Solo over there frozen in carbonite.
And it's It's $150 at ThinkGeek.
Which is not bad. So,
yeah, I mean, it's more than you'd spend on a mini fridge, but it's, you know, it's not terribly much more.
No,
but
yeah.
It's a novelty item. Come on.
You can also get, can't you find legit full size fridges that have the carbonite? I think you can. I think you can actually find a full size fridge.
Really? That has Han Solo on it?
That has Han Solo on it. Yeah.
Wow.
Frozen in carbonite. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Actually, you can find one. But, you know, again, do you really want that in your kitchen? Hi, dear.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's my cool thing of the week.
Yeah.
It's the Rebel bass guitar.
Oh, my God. Huh? The Millennium Falcon.
It's the Millennium Falcon as a bass.
So, that's actually pretty awesome.
And if you look at it, it is very cool. There are lights. It looks like the Falcon with the neck coming out of the front with the bass. So
God.
Very cool.
This is
so
great.
It's the Rebel bass guitar. Get it, Rebel bass. Get Rebel bass. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Anyway, so that's my cool thing of the week.
Nice.
And you know what you want to have with
what's that
with that in your band.
What?
Would be the Slave Leia Predator electric guitar.
Yes, right. Which is
there you
right,
go.
There's right. There. Yeah, I clicked on that right away too. So
I mean, it's only $400 and something. So
that's like the best scene ever.
$450.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a likeness on there too.
It is. It's a very good likeness.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway,
so
your Star Wars theme band.
There's this. I mean, yeah.
You'd have it covered here.
This Star Wars themed cool thing of the week is going to be now blown to hell because Steve's got something that has nothing to do with Star Wars, right?
No, come on.
Well, Steve? Except though that both of these are going to do well when they re-release the new Star Wars, or not re-release, but they come out with a new movie.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yep. So here is my cool thing of the week. You probably know that one-page websites are
big.
They're big. They're getting hotter and hotter. And there is a site called onepagelove.com that has 5,000 right now, has 5,645 one-page websites that you can look at.
That all look amazingly the same.
Well, a lot of them. Then they have a gallery broken up into categories. So if you want to see like an annual report one page or an event one page or a landing page or a photography or a restaurant, whatever, you can do that. Then they have a template area, which has, you know, Photoshop templates, Bootstrap framework templates, WordPress, Tumblr, yada, 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 Adobe Muse. So if you want to build a site in Adobe Muse, they have HTML templates, all one-page templates. And then there's a bunch of resources and a blog and so forth. I was actually blown away by what a great job they did putting this thing together, because it really does give you the opportunity to sort of decide what you want if you want a one-page site.
There you go.
So that's my cool thing.
That's your cool thing.
It's cool. It has nothing to do with Star Wars.
Nothing to do with Star
nothing
Wars.
Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Oh, wow. So you could put a picture from Star Wars on it and go from there. When's that new movie supposed to be out, guys? When is
in December.
Movie? December. So a Christmas release.
I think it's the middle part. It's I think it's the 15th or whatever that Thursday is. Wednesday, Thursday. Right. Yeah. Before Christmas, yeah.
It'll be kind of a nice relief from the Marvel onslaught. So
yeah, but there's a new James Bond movie coming out in November.
Yes.
So that looks good.
That's called Spectre, right?
That's right, with the return of Ernst Blofeld.
Ooh. Who's playing Mr. Blofeld?
Well, the rumor is that it's Christoph Waltz, who's been... I mean, he's the guy that's won two Academy Awards in subsequent Quentin Tarantino movies. He was the German guy in Inglourious Basterds, and then he played the German guy also in Django Unchained. For both movies, he won the best supporting actor.
He would be a great Blofeld. He
was really good in Inglourious Basterds because he did the movie and he spoke French and he spoke German and he spoke English, and he was perfect in all of them. It was it was quite well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it says that he has actually been signed for it. So.
Yeah, no, he is, and he's playing some other role, but because Spectre is back, I think it's like a cover thing, just like they did with the Star Trek movie where it was some other name, but it ended up being Khan. That was the big deal.
Oh, gotcha.
Right, okay. So I think it's the same kind of thing, and he'll pop up as Blofeld, but right. We'll see. It should be good.
I like that.
Same guys that made Skyfall are back. The same directors, same writers, all that stuff.
I hope they can shorten it down.
Well, they're saying that this is going to be sort of like the first two because the Quantum of Solace opens up literally minutes after the ending of Casino Royale. So this is going to be the same kind of thing where the next day after the events of Skyfall, starts. So it'll be.
And I've also heard it sort of incorporate some stuff from Casino Royale. As well.
Oh, that's good.
Nice.
Anyway.
So, all right. Upcoming events, kids. Mini Analytics is having their big data tech conference on the technology behind analytics on Monday.
Yeah. Graham stuck that one in.
Yep.
Amongst other stuff.
Well, and then what and who is Anaplan? I don't know Anaplan.
I don't know either. And this is something that Graham also stuck in. And he said that he wouldn't be able to go there, but it says it's a cloud for finance, sales, operations, and HR.
Interesting.
It's a cloud.
Could be one of Graham's clients.
Could be.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's, come on.
Huh. All right. Well, and then Club Entrepreneurs having their sports technology under the radar event.
Which is $30, right?
Yeah, I think we talked about that last week, though.
Yep,
so.
We did.
New one here, Summer Social at Surly. This is for the Minnesota Interactive Media Association.
Your hurdle right over Mobile Twin Cities.
Stepped over, yeah.
Right over my little event.
That's because we talked about it last week.
There too.
Well, yeah. All right. We're talking about I.O. We're doing an I.O. recap with panel, and then we also have
you'll be able to do WWDC, too.
We'll be able to talk about at least the keynote. Yeah, the keynote. So, obviously, WWDC is on all week, but... yeah, we'll have
the keynote.
Keynote. So.
Do you have anybody out there, by the way?
At WWDC? Yeah, we have about four or five people out there.
How about at I.O.? Same thing?
Yeah, we had locally, we had four or five BuzzFeeders out there, but we also had two local folks. So as I said, like Dan Tan and one award and Kyle Sherman as well.
Well, people are overwhelmed by what happened at I.O., so I can I.O. imagine. What WWDC will be like.
I mean, I don't know. It looks like WWDC will just be a little more sedate. I don't think it'll be, there won't be any earth-shattering announcements. I think it's sort of incremental change. That's the vibe I'm getting from WWDC. I know we talked a little bit about what they expect, but I don't think there's going to be anything. Ooh.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we'll skip over the IBM content thing, go to Summer Social at Surly, the Minnesota Interactive Marketing Associations having their big annual summer event so people can connect up and get together. Yep. And then the only other new one on here is Brand Disruption, How the Consumer Hijacked Marketing and What We're Doing About It at the Dakota Jazz Club. And
That's in July. That's another one that Graham asked to stick in there.
Yeah. But I think Charlie Watts is actually going to play there too.
Right.
Just Charlie Watts
Rolling Stones drummer. He was there at the Dakota. Dakota. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah,
he did.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a big jazz guy.
Right. Right.
Of course, he's like 72 or 3, something like that.
Oh, this is a Cicerone thing.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
There you go.
Great. Yeah, I still can't believe, the Stones. I mean, it's like, I can't imagine my grandmother playing rock and dancing.
Yeah, but everybody I talked to that saw it said it was great.
That's what I heard, too. Yeah,
it was just a wonderful show.
They said it was
show.
Just like, my God, these guys were on fire.
They're entertainers. So,
they are. Yeah.
They have some experience.
And I also noted they spent a lot of people I talked to said, poor Grace Potter, who opened for the Stones, was raining during her set. So not a lot of people in the stands. They were all kind of hidden in the tunnels. But I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I downloaded one of their albums. Good band. Got to check it out.
Hmm.
So there's my little plug. There you go.
Nice.
That's your tip of the week.
That's my tip of the week.
Yeah, we'll have to put that in.
Music tip of the week.
Yeah. All right.
There you go.
DJ's tip of the week. We'll call it spin of the week. That's what we'll spin, call it.
Yeah, right. There you go.
There you go.
It's the my stack of wax.
Spin of the week.
Yeah, so we have a couple of things to talk about next weekend, and we will do that on
the Minivate Gang podcast. Take care, guys.
Yeah, you too.